serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to this special holiday edition of Hometown Heroes, adding a little perspective to your family gathering by getting a taste of what some of our World War II veterans went through on Christmases long, long ago. We left off in December 1944 with a sailor named Pat Doohan clinging to life in the Pacific. His destroyer, the USS Hull, was one of three that had gone down in Typhoon Cobra. At this point, he was with 11 other survivors on a raft. The storm was still raging, and they had no idea whether or not they'd survive.
We could talk to each other. Two of them drank salt water and died from exposure, and we let them drift away. And you say something or say a prayer and let them go, and you know they're going to be gone. And we drifted several days, and some of the guys were going to go a little bit nuts at various times, hallucinating, and I think the last night out, pretty near everybody was in that frame of mind. One fellow went outside the raft, and the shark tore his arm up, and we got him back in. The last day out, one of the fellows said, "There's a bunch of ships on the horizon over there," and he pointed over there. He said, "Oh, you're nuts like everybody else." Well, we rubbed the salt out of our eyes, and sure enough, we saw some ships over on the horizon, just the stacks and the smoke. And about that time, two carrier airplanes came over, circling, you know, watching for submarines ahead of the fleet. And they passed over us, but, you know, they were so high up, a man looks like a little thumbnail in the ocean. But pretty soon they made a circle, and they came right down at water links, and they wiggled their wings. And we knew we'd been spotted.
They waved at you.
They waved at us, and pretty soon a big cloud of smoke went up from this fleet over there, and we knew a destroyer had lit off its boilers. And we, you know, being some destroyer men, you know, when you see that big cloud of black smoke, you know something's coming. Well, a big, beautiful USS Brown pulled up alongside of us, and they threw us a line. And when they threw us a line, started pulling over to us, the sharks went into frenzy. And they had to break out guns and just start firing to keep the sharks from away from us. And so they got us up. They helped us up the rope ladder. And we got on deck. And, of course, we're macho men, you know. Nothing wrong with us. We don't need two guys on each side of us. Let go of me. Well, they let go of me. I hit the deck immediately. I needed some help.
Well, how long had you been in the water now?
Three and a half days, yeah.
Holy cow.
With no food or water. See, that the water was a bad thing. Food you can do without, but water you can't. So they took us in. The first thing they did was give us a shot of whiskey, which burned all the way down.
I imagine.
And then they gave us sips of water. I went to the Browns' first reunion a number of years ago. And the guy that gave me that sip of water wanted to have a picture taken with me, give him that sip of water. So then they... immediately, they were getting low on supplies, but they broke out their best the next day, and they gave us some food, and each guy gave up a sack for us. A little bit later on, they picked up the only six survivors from the Monahan.
Mm-hmm.
They were 20 minutes later, they picked those guys up. They were a good bunch of guys.
And so by this time, you've realized our ship's gone, the Monahan's gone, the Spence is gone.
We didn't know about the Spence.
Okay.
We didn't, so they, in fact, each man gave us a sack, and the fellow whose sack I'm in, he gave up. I'm still good friends with him.
How about that?
He lives in Sacramento. We visit once in a while. But anyway, they took us into Ulithi and took us over to the Solus, one of these big hospital ships painted white with a red cross on the side of us. And like I say in the letter, Christmas Eve, we were carried on board the Solus and stretchers, and the nurses singing Christmas carols. I'll never forget that.
I can imagine why that is a Christmas memory that stays with you forever. At what point did it occur to you, almost 800 men died in this typhoon, and somehow I survived? And what did you make of that? Why do you think you are one of the ones that got to come home?
There's a reason. I'm still looking for, though, there's a number of reasons, I guess. I mean, I have a had a good family, I've had a good life, have a good wife, and a lot of good friends, although at our age we're losing a lot of them. Just like my shipmates, and being the reunion coordinator, we had to close it down after 22 years. But there's a reason, and I don't know.
You've been trying to figure the reason out?
I've tried to figure it out, and it saddened me to know that I lost so many shipmates. Some of them were very close to me. And on a ship like an old destroyer, while you're, except for the new fellows, we had just taken on a bunch of new fellows in Seattle, which we didn't get to know, but most of us had served several years together, and we're all very, very close, which makes it kind of rough when you're that close to a group and you've served and done so many things together to lose them. Out of the total, there was 92 survivors off the three ships.
And that's out of almost 900 men total.
So we say we got the most. We got 62. The Spence had 24. And the Monahan had 6.
So that's fewer than 100 survivors out of nearly 900 sailors on those three ships. And just on Doohan's destroyer, there were 10 sailors who never had the chance to meet their children who were born while they were at sea.
When we left to go home, there were 13 of our wives pregnant. We're kind of a prolific bunch of guys, I guess.
We had
not been to sea for so long. But out of the 13, three of us survived. And I have talked and seen some of the children of those that were lost, and it's quite touching, and they're quite interesting to know what went on, and it was very, very touching to have them come up and just talk to you.
And Pat Doohan was always willing to talk about it. He was such a great ambassador for his ship, his fallen shipmates, and the survivors of Typhoon Cobra. He never heard a sweeter Christmas carol than the ones that welcomed him aboard that hospital ship on Christmas Eve, 1944. Pat passed away in 2015 at the age of 92. You can link to his complete original interview at hometownheroesradio.com. And finally today, a man who earned the Silver Star in Italy. While the Battle of the Bulge was raging to the north, Allied forces were fighting the Germans in Italy as well, and that's where Alvin Pate was with the 91st Infantry Division.
We crossed the Po River, the infantry and weapons platoons, all of us on pontoons crossing the Po River. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't get our tanks with us, so we advanced to a place called Syria, Italy. And then one of the people, we call him Fascist, he came and told us, he says, you're bypassing a lot of German lines, German tanks. And I told Captain Bowling, I says, why don't we try to do something about that before dark? It's probably maybe 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
He says, oh, that's in C Company's section. Well, they'll take care of that. But instead, they did not take care of it. So during the night, here came this bunch of German tanks. In Italy, all the entrances and the exits in the towns, there's an archway, okay?
Right.
They led with a half track. You familiar with what a half track is?
Absolutely, yes.
Because it had a lot of power on it, guns.
Mm-hmm.
So we let it get right in the middle of this archway, and we dropped a phosphorus shell right in the middle of it, and it burned it to the ground. And then there was enough shells going off that we kept them from, they tried to hook a chain or cable on it to get it out of the way so they could get through with their tanks. But we kept them all night from managing to move that half track. You know,
mm-hmm.
Then during the night, one of their men came down the road waving a white flag, and I gave the orders to cease fire and let him advance. And then after he was there just a little bit, he says, now, can I go tell my comrades? I said, oh, no, you don't. You go 50 yards up that line. You better stay on that line. And you tell them if they want to surrender, but lace their fingers behind their head and come in a single file with no guns down that right down that line, in a single line. And he told them that, and they said, we're not surrendering under those terms. I says, well, tell them they're going to die if they don't surrender. Well, they wouldn't surrender, but then he asked, may I return to my comrades? I says, oh, no, you don't. You're same as a prisoner of war right now.
So they avoided what could have been a disastrous situation there, and later Alvin Pate earned the Silver Star for rescuing fellow soldiers who had been buried by enemy artillery blasts.
I have received several letters from people that I had saved. My friends and I, Resley and I, dug these men up there out of Livernano.
Yeah.
I told you that there was a large chunk of shrapnel lodged in my mess kit on my back. And Resley and I dug these men up with those artillery and rocket shells. They were firing directly in there. We dug them out, and like I said, a guy by the name of Jarvis lived, but we couldn't revive Corette, who had been my messenger up to that time.
So as you're digging him out, unbeknownst to you, you're hit by a piece of shrapnel. And when, tell us how you realized that. Something felt a little different, didn't it?
Well, it was a little bit afterwards. I thought, that thing is sure heavy. And I took the combat pack and turned it around. And there, about half of it was lodged in my mess kit on my back. And did it cut a hole down, well, it cut a tree down, I'd say about 3 or 4 inches. It cut it off right at the end of a slit trench where I was at, you know.
So it was certainly enough to cut you if your mess kit hadn't been there.
I didn't get all that. What did you say now?
It sounds like that shell was certainly enough to take you out if that mess kit hadn't been in the perfect place to save your life.
Yeah, the Lord's been good to me, like I told you. That's the reason I'm here today.
Sounds like you have a few of those moments during your time in the war where you felt someone was definitely looking out for you.
Well, yes, I know. I could feel that the Lord was with me. And that if you have the Lord on your side, you can do things that you couldn't do at all without him. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I understand that you spent a lot of time not just praying for your own survival and for your wife and baby back home, but for all the men who served under you?
Yes, I did. I prayed for my men, and I prayed for the wisdom to be able to lead them in such a way that they wouldn't get killed. You know, we had been 5 miles in advance of the main line from Livernato, and the captain asked me, he says, do you think you could take a detail of men? We'd been up there 30 days at that time,
mm-hmm.
back to Livernano, that was where the main line was, and pick up letters and packages for our troops that are here. I said, well, I can sure try, sir.
Well, why don't you tell us what day that was?
Yeah, I took 6 men. Can you believe this is in detail?
And this was Christmas Eve, 1944, right?
That's right.
Uh-huh.
So I thought the Germans may have thought more about Christmas than we thought they did. Because as we advanced, the snow was about hip deep or a little more, and I'd been leading with the 6 men until the Germans, they closed off in front of us. And I told my men, I says, form a skirmish line. If you're familiar with the skirmish line, that's you spread out to where each one has a field of fire.
Right.
Okay. When the Germans seen us do that, they opened up just apart, and we went right on through. They didn't even fire on us, and we went through to Livernano, and we were loaded with mail and packages and things going back for our company, which was 200 men, you know. But, you know, we formed a skirmish line when we seen them closing off in front of us. They opened up and let us go right on through.
Now, how close would you say you were to the German soldiers? How far away were they? A matter of feet?
Maybe 50 yards.
Uh-huh.
They backed off and let us go right on through them.
Did you make eye contact with anyone?
I think, no, they didn't fire nothing on us. And we didn't fire at them. But they let us go right on through with all that mail and packages. And if they'd have started opening up on us, we'd had mail and packages scattered all over because we'd had to be firing, right?
You probably would have had you laid out on the snow dead, too.
Yeah, so I saw that a lot because I thought that was kind of funny, you know, because maybe the Germans thought more about Christmas than we thought they did, huh?
Well, what did that mean to you when you, and I imagine that after the war you probably reflect on that, and maybe this Christmas and every Christmas you reflect on that. Did that tell you that this was about more than the hostilities, more than one man trying to kill another, and that there was a common denominator, even though you're on opposite sides of that conflict?
Well, when we were in advance of the main line, 4 or 5 miles,
Yeah.
From Livignano, the GIs, they always nicknamed everything. They called it the Gobbler's Knob.
All right.
Okay, they nicknamed the Gobbler's Knob. But then Livignano itself was nicknamed by the Germans Liver and Onions. But anyway, I came through 288 days of it, and I was the only boy in our family, and someone said, well, you could have got out of it because you were the only man in the family.
Right.
I says, no, I didn't want out of it. I got in it. Only way I wanted out was to win, you know, win the war and get it over with.
And I imagine, and I've interviewed a lot of guys who lived through the Battle of the Bulge. I know how cold that winter was in 1944. But I imagine that Christmas of 1944 was probably about as memorable a Christmas as you've ever had.
I think so. I really think so, because I think we always heard that the Germans didn't believe in Christmas and stuff like that. That made me think they knew more about Christmas than we thought they did, don't you think?
Yes, and no doubt those letters from home, safely delivered to their intended recipients, brought a little Christmas cheer to weary soldiers who sorely needed it. Alvin Pate passed away in 2012 at the age of 90. Like the others you heard from today, you can access the complete original interview with him at hometownheroesradio.com. No matter how you're spending your holiday season in 2018, you're not in a Japanese prison camp, you're not being rescued at sea after surviving a typhoon that killed hundreds of your shipmates, and you're not shivering in an Italian winter thanking the enemy for letting you pass through with mail for beleaguered troops. Just a few examples of what our men and women in uniform then and now endure for the sake of our freedom. Whether you're celebrating Christmas, like my family, or another holiday, I hope you enjoy the blessings of America and remember those who put their lives on the line to preserve that privilege for the rest of us. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you once more that freedom is not free.